Welcome to Authors of the Pacific Northwest, where we connect Pacific Northwest authors with new listeners and provide advice for aspiring authors on the business of writing. I'm your host, Vicki J. Carter. So hi there, listeners. Today we have an author that I have known about for a while because we used to work together in our past life. And she goes by Kay Kibbe, but you will hear me say Chris because that's how I knew her. And she also goes by Christine. So Christine, say hello to our listeners and let us know in my first question with you. Why don't you tell us just a little bit about yourself, like what state in the Pacific Northwest do you live in? Do you work outside of the home? Give some background about you.
All righty. Well, greetings and salutations to everyone who is listening to this. If it's about me, I don't know, maybe 2-3 people, but who knows? A lot of people probably come to listen to Vicki, me not so much. My family doesn't even usually listen to me. In any event, I am born and bred in Washington. I've lived here my whole life. I have no plans of moving. I think it's quite lovely and I like it. Anytime I go anywhere else, I find it either horrendously hot or dry or gray or brown or just not darn green enough. So yes, yeah. I am from Castle Rock, Washington, to be specific, and I've stayed in the Cowlitz County region. Castle Rock's a pinprick, so most people probably don't know it. Population, I think, is at the very high level, about 2,200 people. So yes. Just here in a little backwoods kind of area in Washington.
Yep.
As far as work, go ahead.
I was just saying, I like to not let everybody know how beautiful Washington is to try to keep people out of our area. But today we have.
I discourage. People are getting the memo, though, I think.
Yeah, they are, unfortunately. Sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt. Go for it.
With regard to work, as Vicki mentioned, we used to work together at a college here in Longview, Washington. But now I am employed rather meagerly so, admittedly, as a full-time writer. So this is what I do full-time. I write, obviously, novels, and then I write a column, and I'm always writing something. But I do that, and then I'm a slave to two mischievous French bulldogs, and I try and keep them in line, but I usually fail.
Yes, I love your dogs. We have that in common. Listeners will eventually hear about my crazy kennel is what we call them. The two rescue dogs we have, they're out of control. Hopefully they will never come up on the mic because I try to get them away from hearing. But if you're barking, I apologize. So just the way things.
Which could also be from my end. I sequestered mine outside right now, but who knows?
That's where mine are too, and we'll see if they last.
Yeah.
So moving back to you as an author, so I know you're published, but tell our listeners that don't know about you what you've published, kind of give us some titles and a little bit of background of each of those pieces.
Okay. Well, I was first published with Zarmi Publishing Press. Gosh, I want to say it was 2013 or 2014, and that was a middle grade fantasy novel called Hole in the Clouds. Mm-hmm. I did self-publish briefly prior to that, Mischievous Misadventures of Dewey the Daring. That is a mouthful, and that was a little short story compilation of a non-fiction adventures of my mischievous French bulldog at the time. And that did go, you know, Amazon self-published. But as far as published works, Hole in the Clouds was my first. And then I have since published with Incognito Publishing Press a three-part series of young adult fantasy books called Forest of the Fae. The first book, Devlin's Door, came out a couple years ago. Then last year, the second book, The Raven Queen, came out. And my third book in that series, Lang's Labyrinth, is actually due out next month. And then also for an imprint called Corgi Bits, which is a division of Incognito, I am writing a number of, I guess I'd call it a collection because I'm not sure where it stops or starts. Well, it starts at one, but I'm not sure how many books I'll be writing in it. But it is it's like a chapter book collection of fantasy, a little fantasy story that follows Corgi, who is Incognito's mascot, named Theodore, who is adopted from a shelter and brought into an enchanted bookstore. And he goes on many adventures where he actually enters the books along with his kind of sheepish owner who owns the bookstore, and they get into all kinds of mischief. But the first book in that series, Theodore and the Enchanted Bookstore, Tale of the Spectacular Spectacles, came out last year. Theodore and the Tale of Robin Hound is due out in about 2 months, and then I'm currently working on the third book.
Fantastic.
In that.
So you're quite experienced publishing here. And that the Theater and the Enchanted Bookstore, the first book, Tell of the Spectacular Spectacles. We actually to your illustrator, J.H. Winter, in a prior podcast that will probably air before yours because of kind of how it worked out. And so she talked a little bit about that. So, and also for my listeners, that was the freebie that they gave to me with a signed copy that we used for getting interest in the podcast. So one lucky listener actually received that signed copy. So that was pretty exciting. So here is my question that I ask all my authors that are coming here, because this is really for me. I'm selfish. I'm aspiring, getting into this publishing world. You talked a little bit about you did have a self-publish on Amazon, and now you're with a publishing house. So kind of tell us and me how that progression went for you, and what was the choice and the factor for you going with a publishing house and working with the publishers? It sounds like more of a traditional sense.
Right. Well, I would say the chief motivation behind my wanting a traditional publisher is that I am a cheapskate, and I didn't want to publish my own books. I mean, I looked into, as I'm sure most of your listeners who investigate the self-published route have or will, you know, printing on demand and putting up my own stuff and paying for my own editing and paying for my own cover. And, you know, by hook or by crook, I figured I could get it done, but I just didn't want to invest the money. You know, I didn't want to pay someone a formidable sum to edit my book. I didn't want to buy a cover. I didn't want to have to print on demand, which is based upon my research, not a particularly lucrative way to do things. I didn't want to do any of that. And I also didn't really want to do the beefy marketing. I mean, not only the cost involved with promoting, you know, in the kinds of areas where you would get the exposure necessary to really get your book looked at, but also because I didn't want to put in the grunt work. Now, hindsight being 2020, I'd have known that regardless of the fact that you know, self-publish or go with a traditional publisher, you're going to be in you know, the trenches doing the marketing. You've got to put it in no matter what. So that's kind of a moot point, but I didn't want to invest the money. And sadly, there are even a lot of, you know, traditional, quote unquote, traditional publishers out there that'll start asking you for money. And that's a red flag. If you get with a publisher and they're saying like, sure, we'll do this $100. Sure, we'll do that $200. Then you're in the wrong place. Unfortunately, there's so many people looking into this that just, you know, it motivates scammers to kind of come out of the woodwork. So you do have to be wary in that degree.
Yeah, that's something that I have heard about so far, haven't experienced myself. I did it years ago when I was researching this way, you know, I would say 12 years ago, 15 years ago. There was a lot of that. Pay to play is what I call it, because I come from a music industry, and that's kind of what we called it when you had to pay to play. And it's kind of similar. But what I'm curious about with you is, where was that trigger point for you in the sense of your first submission to, how did you go from writing your first book, your first piece, going to submission? Kind of walk us through that process, because I'd be curious. I think my listeners would be curious in how you did that. What did you do? What were the steps?
I think I took the traditional route that most authors do, and I started out looking for an agent, because everybody kind of knows that as the end all be all, you know, and I still think to a degree that it is, because you walk in with an agent and that is an endorsement. That is the green light that this person has something going on. You know, it's unfortunate again that because of the inundation of people self-publishing, there is a lot of crap out there, and it's hard to know. And I think that's another reason that I shied away from self-publishing, because I think so many readers, you just click on something, you're trying to support somebody self-publishing, and you're like, oh, this person's got something, it looks quasi-professional, you click on it, and the writing is just abysmal, and you've already maybe paid the money. So I think that makes a lot of readers shy away from self-publishing, because they picked up a couple that are just horrid, and the poor people writing, as much as they love it, have no clue. And so then all of a sudden they make that association. They don't want to stay away from self-publishing authors. Mm-hmm. So that I think that publishers, you know, and by rights, look at it the same way. Someone walks in with an agent and they're like, okay, this person has a clue. They kind of know what they're doing. And so we're going to look seriously at their stuff. Whereas they get, you know, 100 requests of someone without an agent and, you know, they're just not going to invest the scrutiny in that and the consideration in that, that they are someone who has an agent. So I took the route that everyone else did. I started querying agents. There's a site called Agent Query. You know, I did all the research on how you're supposed to format your query letter and, you know, do you go offbeat? Do you go quirky? Do you stay by the standards? I mean, I sent out both kinds. I had people say, you know, send them flowers, send them chocolate.
I know.
Don't do that. Go by the formula. They hate it when you don't go by the formula. So I tried everything. And I mean, rejection upon rejection upon rejection. And I never did procure an agent to this day. And then I kind of, as I recall, you know, I started looking at publishers who would look at your manuscript without an agent. And those typically are your smaller indie publishers. And I came across Sarmi and, you know, I followed their submission guidelines to the letter. I would say that's something that's important to do. If they ask for XYZ, you better do XYZ exactly as they've asked for it because they're so flooded with submissions, especially the people, you know, the publishers that are looking at non-agented authors. That's how they're going to skim the top off. They're going to take anyone who doesn't do it exactly as they've asked for, and you're going in the trash. So, you know, I took that route. I did my submission. Then I got, you know, as typical, most of them want either a piece of your manuscript or they just want a query, but they rarely ask for the whole thing unless they like it. So then I got the, you know, reply that, oh, we'd like to look at the whole manuscript. And of course, that's when you pee your pants and do a jig. You get excited. And I send in my manuscript and they wanted it. So they signed me on and, you know, the things kind of progression there.
Yeah. So you definitely, it was definitely a very traditional route for you in the sense that, yeah. So that's interesting. Have you ever heard of Author Me? One of my other authors talked about that, and I'll have a link for it in show notes. But she used Author Me, and that's how it's a new, I don't know how new it is. This is showing my ignorance here, but she was able to do all of that all in one platform, and it tailored agents and publishing houses that would fit her genre and what she's working in, which was pretty interesting. She got picked up that way.
Yeah, that is. I haven't heard of that, but gosh, there is so much out there. Like I say, this field is just, it's unfortunate because the demand is drying up, and yet the interest in becoming a writer seems to just constantly be surging. So there's so much stuff out there that there's got to be a jillion things I haven't heard of.
It's a crazy amount. It's hard to navigate through all that. That's why I love these podcasts, because I'm interviewing individuals that have done separate processes. They've either been indie or, you know, individual publishing yourself, or they've done a hybrid of the mix of the two. And I'm learning so much, and I'm hoping listeners are learning too. So you were talking about agents, and right now, so you're kind of working to find an agent. Is that kind of your status as you're working towards finding an agent? And what do you do to do that? How do you find them in your mind? What do you do?
I mean, there are a few platforms. A lot of them are, like you say, pay to play, like Publishers Weekly and stuff. You can go in there and look, you know, you want to find the agents who are listed with the, I can't remember the acronym off the top of my head, but there's, you know, an agency that kind of certifies the legitimate agents, and it's kind of understood that a legitimate agent's going to belong to them. I can't remember what it is off the top of my head, but you want a user. Yeah. I want to say like AMA or something. That could be off. my memory is really, really bad.
It's okay.
Yeah, I've used, there's different platforms. Publishers Weekly I haven't used because I don't want to pay anybody to look at stuff. Agent Query is the one I use. And I think what's important to do, and I'm not stellar at doing it, but I try my best, is even on those, the nice thing is you'll go in, it's like agentquery.com, and you can put in the genre that you're writing for, and you can look at the details, and you can look at like who this agent is represented, what they've published, where they are, it'll have a link typically to their website. Do they belong to the major organizations? And then it's important to research them and make sure that they fit with what you're putting out, because otherwise you're just wasting their time and your time. And I think that's part of why they get kind of pissy, because if they're publishing children's pictures book and you're like querying them for a nonfiction cooking book, everybody's wasting their time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Awesome. So you touched a little bit on something that I'm learning about, and it's the marketing aspect. So there's this kind of belief, I think, for many of us aspiring authors coming into that if you go the traditional route, you're going to have a marketing team behind you. And that is not true from what I am hearing and understand, that you actually have a pretty, you need to have a strong presence and ability to market yourself, social media marketing, that kind of thing. So am I correct in that? And if I am, what's your marketing strategies? What do you really focus in on?
You know, a lot of traditional publishers, right, in the contract that you sign will say you have to have Twitter, you have to have Instagram, you have to have Facebook. I mean, that was part of my Zarmi contract, that I had to develop and maintain those pages. You know, you will do a minimum of this many posts a day.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So a lot of them do have that. There are still, I mean, I would say it depends on the level of your publisher. You know, my publisher right now, they are an indie publisher. The smaller indie publishers, you're going to be doing most all the work. But there, you should expect a certain amount of marketing chops behind you. I mean, they shouldn't be doing nothing. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't, it's like, is so competitive that everybody has to be working at it. So they should be doing some stuff. They should be promoting you. You know, like say my publisher right now, they'll run, you know, Facebook ads for my books and they'll pay to promote them. Yeah. You know, they'll put ads on Amazon. They'll put ads in magazines. I just got picked up and my publisher's experimenting with doing outsourcing to a publicist. Oh. So right now I'm with Smith Publicity, and the launch of my third book in this Force of the Face series, we're doing like a 2 to 3 month publicity campaign. And I mean, they do everything, and they've contacted the New Yorker, you know, they've contacted every local paper. They got me a couple of recent interviews. They got me, you know, on a, signed up for a podcast for OPB. They've got me scheduled for DW in a couple of months. So, and we get weekly updates from them. They just got us on MuggleNet on Instagram, which has over like 2 million followers, I'm told. And they got us in Girls Weekly, Girls Life. So, I mean, it just depends. But, you know, that's costing my publisher several thousand dollars. Not every publisher is going to do it, but they should be doing at least something. But you're going to have to be responsible probably for maintaining, you know, like those three platforms, probably like Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. And whether or not you do that well or not is going to, I mean, if you just go on there every day, you don't really do much and you just like retweet or post something about how writing is great or content, hard.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You have to try and engage people. I personally do that on Twitter through some writing hashtag games. And then on Facebook, I've tried to tailor things to where people are interacting because you'll start to find out what works and what doesn't. But it's very time consuming and you have to be very active, and it is work, and
it is,
you know, gets to the point where it isn't really fun. But if you don't do it, nobody's going to notice. If you think you've got great writing, that's awesome. There are a lot of great writers out there who never get noticed at all because they're writing in a vacuum. You've got to engage and reach out and pull people to you and give them a reason to read your stuff.
I agree. And I actually enjoy the marketing and the whole social aspect, all of it. I enjoy it, but I'm an online native. That's what I do. You know, I'm always online for work, my day job. So it's not, you know, something that isn't really scary to me too much. I'm interested in, and you and I'll have, hopefully stay in touch, and because I'm curious about your publicist, because, how that process goes. We might bring on a little later after you see some results from the publicist, see how that works for you. Cause I do know publicists will pursue some authors. I've had one pursue me and I'm on the fence right now. I love her to death. She's a friend, but she does, you know, publicists in for other authors, and I'm kind of debating myself if I want to do it or not. So I'm kind of there with it. So talking about
So far I'm seeing good results. Good. I'll keep you abreast of that
though. Yes, please do. So because I'll be curious. So another aspect that I have found that I don't think you and I have talked about before, but I've talked about with other authors, is kind of a support network for you as an author. And some of those support networks that many of authors that I've found recently, they're involved with online associations like Pacific Northwest Authors Associations, and that, or they're part of a small writing group. I just started a small writing group, which is a lot of fun so far. Right. And so what kind of support did you have, or were you just solely doing it all by yourself? You didn't really have a big support group.
Yeah, honestly, I'm kind of a loner, I would say. I mean, I just don't, I, you know what, I'm going to tell you right now, it's to my detriment. I would totally agree with you. You network, you connect with people, and that's how you get places. And as much as I don't like it, whenever I do it, it does benefit me, and it does. And I think it's very hard to make it the way that I am doing it. And I would be the first to tell you that. I think the more you do and the more you engage with others and put yourself out there, the more connections you're going to make. I mean, my illustrator who you know, you did the other interview with, she just randomly reached out to me on Twitter, and that's how we connected. And prior to us connecting, she had no publishing credits. So the fact that she was outgoing about it and was like, hey, I'm getting into this community. She actually at the time was living in California, noticed I was in the Pacific Northwest and she was moving to the Pacific Northwest. So she reached out to me. She's like, hey, I'm an author too, and I'm an illustrator, and I'm moving there. And it was just random. Now, I'm not that person. I would not have reached out, but she is, and it worked to her benefit. It got her, you know, her artwork exposed. It got her connected with other people. It got, you know, it benefited her. And so I think that's very valuable. I really don't do it, and I really, really should. But it is good. I mean, even I do have kind of an online following on Twitter, and I engage with people a lot in there. And I picked up a couple just from engaging with people. Like, I had people commission me for short stories and, you know, want to buy my books and want to interact with me. And I do it, but I don't seek it out. But I know if I did, it would be my benefit.
Yeah. Well, I'm always here, you know that. and my little groups are always here. And I did, I mean, I made that great connection with Julianne from you, because I knew you were a writer, but we had not been in contact with each other for a good 6-7 years after I left the job I was in with you, and reached out. And luckily for me, you turned me on to her, and she too.
That's very much how it's done. And it's because she was eager. Yeah, because I reached out to her and I said, would you be interested in this? And she's like, yeah. You know, so those are the opportunities you want to take advantage of that I don't.
Well, her and I'll work on you. How's that? So tell us, you know, through this whole journey, this is a question I asked you before, and I really loved your response. What keeps you going as an author? What is it?
Oh, well, it's just that I can't stop. I mean, I can be really good at giving up at things. But the writing is just something. In fact, for years I wanted to get a tattoo, and I wouldn't do it. And I thought, I'm just a very logical person. And I'm like, and when I'm 80, am I still going to think that The NeverEnding Story is the best movie ever? Or am I going to look down at my tattoo and go, what a fool, you 80-year-old lady, that you have this NeverEnding Story tattoo on your arm. But I got a tattoo about 5 months ago that says writer.
Nice.
And it's because I will always be a writer. I just can't not write. I mean, it just, no matter, I get mad. I take my ball, I stomp off, and I'm not playing anymore. And this is, you know, bull. And man, I wish I could shake it, but I just can't. I mean, I am a writer. I grew up writing. It's the one thing that just, it's like innate to me. I feel it. And that's when I feel, writing is one of the only things I can do where I actually lose track of time. I mean, I'm super antsy. And even if I'm watching a movie I like, or just doing anything, I'm just like, okay, well, what time is it? How long has it been? What am I going to do next? Blah, blah, blah. I'll sit down to write, and 2 hours is just like gone. Nothing else in my life is like that. And it's just always been, and no matter how much it frustrates me, how much I hate the marketing and this and that, it's just in me, and I can't not write. So that's why I'm a writer, because I just am. I mean, it's just, that's what I am. And I would tell you that if you don't feel that way, then don't do it, because it's a miserable thing to pursue. It's very, very competitive. It's very hard. I've been working at this for well over a decade. I still would not consider myself having made it in any way, shape, or form. So please shy away from it if you can, because there are the million other things you could do that would probably yield a better income and be more stable and not keep you up at night and drive you crazy. But writing, if you're a writer, you just are, and you can't not be.
Yep. And I think that's why I love your answer so much, because those of us that are following this path that really understand what you're talking about, you can't walk away from it.
Yeah.
You're miserable.
Yep.
And I've spent years literally not producing any writing. I have it published, but I also wasn't writing daily either, or writing weekly. And I was miserable. And as I started to develop and kind of jump into this and say, yes, I am a writer, and start doing it, my life completely changed, and it's been better. Now, the business of writing, the whole business of getting yourself out there, all that stuff's crazy challenging. But the writing aspect of it, I totally love how you put it, because it's true. If you can do anything else, do it. Find something else.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. So my last question before we have you start doing your reading, my listeners know that I ask a lot of questions before they get to hear your reading. So, but this one, kind of tell us what information you would like new listeners that don't know about you to know about you right now and your future plans or your future work.
My publicist said this the other day, something about like, we're promoting you and this won't do anything right now, but eventually it will, because we assume you're going to be an author for a while. And I guess that's it, is it's like, I'm here. I'm here for the long haul. Like I said, I can't not do it. So I would love, you know, I do have a particular style. So even if like the genres that I'm working in right now don't appeal to you, I am producing in other genres, you know, maybe look at my writing, peek at my writing. I do have a unique voice and style, and that will stay with me as much as the writing bug does. Mm-hmm. So if you like what I'm writing, stick with me. I'm producing other stuff. I'm always happy to engage with people, even though you kind of have to drag me kicking and screaming. I'm a little bit better on virtual things, because I don't have to compromise my hermitude. But people do, now that I'm getting a little more recognized, do prey upon me for advice and things. But I guess I think there's a certain expectation when you've published a few things that, man, you've got it down and you've nailed it. And I don't know what I'm doing any more than the rest of y'all do. I can tell you what I've experienced and what, you know, what has happened to me. But goodness gracious, it's certainly not the end all be all.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, awesome. Well, I'm definitely sticking with you. So, you know, I tell people all the time, with my normal work day, I'm in the business of harassing students to graduate, and I'm a professional harasser. So you're stuck with me now. So, but then I do appreciate your insights. They're valuable. So I'm going to have you now introduce your reading and characters, and we'll get started in that.
All right, I'm going to be reading you a little bit from Devlin's Door. That's the first book in my Forest of the Fae series. And I'm going to be reading primarily from my main character, Anne. And Anne is a 13-year-old girl who has been kind of begrudgingly shipped off to stay the summer with her relatives in Woodland, actually, which is in close proximity to where we are. And she has come to Woodland and is very bored and, like I said, unhappy with being in this place. And the whole, you know, jumping point of this book and this series is that she hears about this town kind of way out in the woods that basically the entire populace vanished about a century ago, just up and vanished. And, you know, it's kind of all talked about under cloaked hand, and no one really wants to tell her what's going on. But she becomes very curious about this town, and she starts inquiring about it, and she keeps getting shot down by people. So in this passage I'm going to read you, she has actually made her way to the local library in Woodland to try and find out a little bit more about this town and to maybe find some books about it. She at this point doesn't even know the name. So that's what I'm going to be reading to you.
All right.
Again, from Devlin's Door. So we're going to pick up when she walks into the library. All right. A familiar musk hung in the library's foyer, and it grew stronger as Anne approached the main desk. An antique woman with cat's eye spectacles sat there, her nose buried in Pride and Prejudice. She didn't look up from the book as she asked, "May I help you?" "Well, I'm not sure," Anne admitted. "I'm looking for a book, but I don't know what it's called." The woman raised her eyes from the novel, its jacket still hiding the lower part of her face. well, then just what would this book be about? Anne glanced nervously about the lobby. They were alone. Well, a town. And the name of this town? Well, that's the thing. Anne's eyes got big. I don't really know that either. The librarian gave a heavy sigh, placed a scrap of paper in her book and set it on the counter. I see, she said, leveling her gaze at Anne. Then just how am I meant to help you, miss? Her mouth was straight as an arrow. I was thinking or hoping that maybe you might know the name. Anne wrung her hands and conjured the best doe eyes she could emulate. I've only ever heard people call it Nowhere Town. The librarian stiffened in her chair, the face on her neck drawn tight like a rubber mask. She canvassed the lobby just as Anne had done, only to find it empty. Leaning across the desk, her eyeglass chain skimmed its top and then coiled beneath her as she stopped just inches from Anne's face. Well, you know why they call it that, don't you? She hissed. Anne shook her head, the remainder of her body frozen. The librarian leaned in even closer, her eyes silver dollars beneath the glasses. They call it that because it has no name. Or if it did, no one ever wanted to remember. She pushed the glasses up tight to the bridge of her nose and continued, and you won't find any books about it here, if there ever were any. But why? Anne asked in a whisper. On account of the disappearance, I suppose. The librarian's eyes jumped from one end of the building to the other as if watching a tennis match. Finding it still vacant, she explained, folks just don't like to talk about that. They're scared of what they can't explain. Revisiting the stories of Lexi's friends, Anne cocked her head sideways and asked, so no one really does know what happened to the townspeople? Not with any real certainty. Of course, one person will tell you their great uncle's half-brother's best friend witnessed the whole ordeal and recounted it down as the God's truth, but no one really knows. I'm going to pause here because a paperboy comes in, and after he's gone, I'm picking back up again after he's left. Anne refocused herself on the librarian, who she realized had actually shared very little. The librarian laid her paper aside and was quietly tending her nose with an embroidered handkerchief. So, do you know anything else? I mean, anything with real certainty? Anne asked. The librarian raised one eyebrow and turned her nose down. I know a great many things, my child, and indeed many of them with absolute certainty. Sorry, about the town. I just wondered if you knew anything more about the town. Anne batted her eyes and dipped her head. I was just really hoping to learn more. Well, I can tell you this, they weren't well liked, the people in that little village. Times were tough back in those days. A lot of families around here didn't make it. And yet in that village, everything prospered, everything grew, and those folks didn't seem inclined to share it. Anne perched her elbows on the desk and cupped her chin in her palms. Wonder why? Difficult to say, the librarian returned. I suppose in those times, people took care of their own. Perhaps that's why they kept to themselves like they did. Perhaps that's why the town's such a mystery. Softly nodding, Anne fell quiet, as did the librarian. In the great hollow of the library, the silence was amplified. Well, thank you, she finally whispered. Thanks for sharing what you know. The librarian nodded and reached for her novel as Anne followed the scent of musty pages into the belly of the building, filled with more questions than ever. Amidst the warm embrace of the stacks, Anne trailed her pointer finger along spines of familiar titles, not really knowing what she was looking for. She sought out the history section, but no magical books with forbidden secrets revealed themselves. Selecting Woodland, A History of the Trees, from its nook on the shelf, she landed a chair nearby and set to sleuthing. The book was dry, and Anne found herself skipping most of the text, focusing instead on the black and white photos that peppered its pages. Sullen faces haunted the pictures of weathered men gathered around fallen trees and sawmills. Dreary women in full-length dresses held infants who looked somber, even in their youth. I heard you asking about that town, a voice crackled, startling Anne, who nearly dropped the heavy book laying across her lap. She whipped her head left and right, seeking its source, but no one appeared. Hello? A slow, steady creak registered from the shadows two stacks over. In the dimness, the crumpled figure of a man rose from a chair that had been camouflaged by darkness. Heavy with age, he made his way towards her with noticeable effort. He carried a cane fashioned from a lacquered tree limb, and his face hung in saggy, wrinkled bags. I say, I heard you asking about that town, he repeated. Even his lips moved slowly. Oh, yes, Anne stumbled. Do you know it? I suppose. He bobbed his head and studied her with his milky eyes. My older brother, Artie, he had a friend who lived there. Oh, really? Anne perked and leaned forward. Can you tell me anything about it, like what happened there? The old man was still bobbing, seemingly without control. Not really. I was just a baby back then when it all happened. Oh, Anne breathed, deflated. Ah, well, I suppose I'm not entirely useless, though. He steadied on his cane and dipped down low. Weren't you asking for the name of that town? Anne lifted her head level to his. Well, yeah, but I thought it didn't have one. He smiled and his face contorted into a dried turnip. I only know it by the name Marty used to call it. Back in the day, they called it Devlin's. And engineer, well, why'd they call it Devlin's? Well, child, they called it that because the devil lived there.
Awesome. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Christine, for visiting with us and sharing with us your insight. I love the story. I'm going to have to get it so I can finish the rest of it. And I hope our listeners will find you too. All your information will be in the show notes. So listeners, go and find Christine or Kay Kibbe. And thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it. Thank you for listening to the podcast. We hoped you loved hearing from the author as much as we did. If you did enjoy the author, make sure you find them on social media. Buy their book and write a review. Are you a published author and would like to be featured on the podcast? Visit us at our website to learn more. You can help support the production of this podcast by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Share the podcast with your friends. And most importantly, become a supporter. Supporters receive monthly bonus podcasts and a newsletter filled with tips from our authors. To find out more how to become a supporter, visit our website. And finally, I hope you always remember to enjoy the journey. Until next week, this is Vicki J. Carter saying goodbye.